Simba.
Where are we now? Do you know where we stop? No, my phone. You're the next one, okay?
So?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I was going to ask you too, if what I'm going to be reading, I know there's a 30-minute time.
No, it's okay, we don't.
Oh, really?
But just don't go
on the
mic. Okay.
This is not on the file, this is straight up.
Yeah.
And it's really nice.
Yeah, that's okay.
What are they at? What's up? I want to go to their seat, except there's I'm going to go sit there.
Oh, you're here in the East Robert Park Mountain. The Michael Paul, I think, is the next, and then you.
Yeah,
tomorrow? You are not right now? Yeah. But tomorrow, we might not be open anymore. You can come later if you want. Later today. Yeah. You don't have to prepare anything. You can just keep off the house.
This is big for
me. Yeah. Okay, I mean just, let's see this tomorrow morning.
If you please take your seats now, we'll be starting in 2 minutes. Good afternoon, everybody. The 15th meeting of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is called to order. Distinguished members of the forum, we will now continue again with the deliberations we have on item 8, the draft agenda for the 9th session of the forum. Before I call on the Indigenous delegation, I'd like to call on one a representative of an observer government, Namibia, to please have the floor. Mr. Gerson Kamatuka, who is representative of the government of Namibia. You have the floor, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, for giving me another opportunity. Namibia would like to comment on the item number 8, the draft agenda for the 9th session of the Permanent Forum. Taking into recognition the effort that has been done by the member states on the drafting of the agenda for the 9th session, Namibia would like to propose or to suggest an item on the agenda for 2010. For the whole 2 weeks, as member state country, we have been listening to the voices of our friends and the indigenous communities. We also have listened to the voices of various member states in their effort of trying to address the issues of the indigenous people or the marginalized communities of their countries. Madam Chair, therefore, maybe would like to suggest that in 2010, there should be an item which will address precedents or the best precedent on best practices from various member states, what they are trying to do to address the issues of the marginalized communities in their various countries. This must be one of the best ones from the various countries so that the various member states who have signed the declaration can learn from how they are trying to address the issues of their indigenous people. Because we believe that this forum must be a platform where we can learn from each other how we are addressing these very pertinent issues of indigenous people. And such a presentation will enrich us so that we can go back to our continents, to our countries, and to try to implement those various projects. Madam Chair, as you have mentioned that Article 32 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People is a focus on development. The forum should also address development. Apart from addressing rights, development is so crucial in the 21st century. So therefore, with your indulgence, a best practice from the member states, how they are addressing the problem of the indigenous people, selected by the member states themselves, must be presented, not only just for 2010, but also at every forum so that we can learn from that. We submit that amendment to the draft agenda. And while we are having a floor as Namibia, it should also be like a recommendation also that maybe the forum must look at an award-winning project for member states addressing the issues of indigenous people come 2010 or in the future also, to be as an encouragement for other states who haven't signed the declaration or who are not addressing the issue of indigenous people. Madam Chair, we want to conclude by thanking the member states and the secretariat for a well-organized session. I mean, we are referring to the 8th session of 2009. And we are looking forward to participate as a country in future permanent session of this forum, and also to make sure that we are addressing the issue of the indigenous people in our small way, given our small resources. I submit, Madam Chair.
I would like to thank warmly the representative of the Observer State of Namibia, Mr. Gerson Kamatuka, especially for the suggestions also that you proposed. It is always a great... We appreciate very much the presence of African states here in the session, because as has been mentioned by our colleagues, it's not very often that we do get participation from the states from Africa, and it's really a pleasure to at least see Namibia and the Democratic Republic of Congo here, and we will hope to see more of you. We do understand the situation that African countries face, because you have few delegations based here in New York, and you have to cover a lot of ongoing meetings at the same time. So we appreciate the difficulties that you are going through. Now, in relation to your recommendations, these best practices of member states, I think this can really come in. We are going to elaborate further our program of work, but this agenda, provisional agenda, actually are just the general headings. If you can see under the discussion of the special team, which is on the indigenous people's development with culture and identity, we are hoping to see more examples of how indigenous peoples, of course, are taking this up in their own communities, but also how governments and UN agencies are also helping them. So we will enjoin all the different players, whether the states, the UN agencies, or the indigenous peoples, to submit the kinds of experiences that they have, both good and, of course, also the negative ones, as well as identify the constraints that they face in trying to implement the declaration, especially in the area of development. Now, as you know, the mandate of the Permanent Forum is to look at all the different areas. Human rights is just one aspect. We are looking also at the issue of socioeconomic development, environment, culture, health, as well as human rights. No, so we are looking at all these things, and we would really appreciate it very much if member states come here and present such kinds of experiences that they have. So thank you very much again. I would like now to move on to our list, and I would like to call on Michael Paul Hill, who is representing, will speak on behalf of the Lipan Apache Band of Texas, Lipan Women's Defense, Earth People Society for Threatened Peoples International. You have the floor, sir. You have the floor, Michael.
Yes, Madam Chair. First of all, I would like to ask Madam Chair if it would be possible for me to have this intervention videotaped, for the fact that it's tribal archives that I'm here as an official representative of the St. Carlos Apache Tribe, if that would be possible. Madam Chair, I was wondering if it would be possible if I could have this this intervention tape on behalf of the Lipan Apache Defense.
Yes, as long as you give your permission. The rule is that the person who's being filmed has to have your permission. So as long as you are allowing her, you have the free prior informed consent.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, my name is Michael Paul Hill. I'm a representative of the St. Carlos Apache Tribe, the Lipan Apache Defense, and the Lipan Apache Band of Texas. The purpose of this statement is to affirm why the Lipan Apache Women's Defense, the St. Carlos Apache Tribe, Society for Threatened Peoples, the Hawaiian Kingdom, Chi'ina and Dead Warm Springs Band of Chiricahua Apache, Keone Foundation, and the Lipan Apache Band of Texas opposes the Southeast Arizona Land Exchange and the proposed resolution mine at Chichil Bildagotel. How these proposed activities will seriously harm Apaches, and what steps the tribe believes should be taken to resolve this matter. Apaches have traditionally opposed large-scale mining to this day. Since 1996, the tribe's Elder Cultural Advisory Council has written several formal letters to federal and local government agencies strongly opposing large-scale mining. Long before that, countless Apaches fought, killed, and died protecting our homelands from this large-scale mining. Mining is inconsistent with our conservative, traditional Apache values. We have been taught to respect the natural world and to keep it clean and natural. Our traditional relationship with the land is deep and personal. We depend on the natural world for our survival. Our survival depends on maintaining our personal relationships with all living things. Our word for earth is Negustun. Earth is woman. We're taught never to desecrate her by digging deep into her veins. In pre-reservation days, rape was punishable by death, the victim's relatives exacting justice from the perpetrator. When our ancestors saw disrespectful miners raping Negustun, they responded.
Michael, can you just go slowly? More slowly. You have time. So don't hurry up very much. Otherwise, the interpreters will have a difficult time.
Okay. When our ancestors saw disrespectful miners raping Negustun, they responded harshly in a proper traditional manner. They viewed many of the early white settlers, especially miners, as filthy savages who destroyed the natural world wherever they went, through mining, overgrazing, overhunting, or by dirtying the land with their garbage and indiscriminate human waste. Our ancestors found these activities shocking and dangerous. Everything in the natural world is alive and has a power. We have a name for everything: the plants, the animals, the birds, the atmosphere, the minerals, the winds, the stars, the bodies of water, the places, and everything else. We recognize the power that each element of the natural world has and that each individual power is directly related to particular holy beings. We recognize that each of these each of these elements work in concert with the other elements that make up an ecosystem. The power of each of these species is influenced by the other species in the ecosystem, and in these combinations of power contribute to the power of the entire ecosystem. All of these powers are in turn influenced by the particular power of the place they are found, so that the power of each ecosystem cannot be duplicated or replaced. Apaches often need to access these particular species and ecosystems in person or remotely by physical access, prayer, song, vision, or ceremony. Our traditional specialists use song cycles and ceremonies, just like modern scientists use formulas and technology for the community's healing, protection, and physical and spiritual well-being and happiness. Damage to these ecosystems and to the species found within them weakens their power and shows great disrespect to the holy beings with whom they are associated with, who have the ability to deny the benefits of this power or the spiritual or physical access to these ecosystems. Losing access to these ecosystems, both by their closure or their destruction, profoundly weakens the strength of Apache prayer and ceremony and severely limits the ability of Apaches to effectively practice their religion, ultimately resulting in the physical and spiritual harm to the Apaches. Over the past 150 years, our traditional lands have been destroyed place by place, ecosystem by ecosystem. We see parking lots covering our traditional food and medicine gathering areas, our sacred springs run dry by development, and trailer parks in our traditional corn and pumpkin fields. Now you are proposing more destruction. The proposed mine at Chichilba Dagotel will destroy many particular ecosystems and the living things within them. These ecosystems and living things are associated with particular holy beings that we depend on, in particular a certain kind of gone, all-powerful mountain spirits with whom Chichilba Dagotel is associated. Destroying this area will greatly hurt our ability to conduct public and private ceremonies involving these gone and other holy beings. The area impacted by the mine includes cherished traditional food and medicine gathering areas, which would be forever lost if the mine were to open. We believe that the proposed mine will seriously affect the waters both above and below the ground that we depend on for physical and spiritual sustenance. We believe that there is no way to mitigate this loss or the serious impacts to the Apaches. We believe that destroying these ecosystems will violate our civil and religious and human rights. We, like you, believe in economic development for our people. We need jobs desperately, but we cannot accept an economy that is inconsistent with our most deeply held values. Just as you don't want jobs for your young people that are based on drugs or prostitution, we don't want jobs that are based on destroying Nigelstun. We believe that an economy based on extractive industries is short-term and physically and spiritually harmful. We believe, like so many international reports indicate, that extractive industries rarely benefit indigenous communities. We want the federal government to proceed with a full administrative review through an environmental impact statement so that we can more fully analyze the serious impacts that this proposed mine will have on our people. Existing cultural resource legislation has been ignored by the absence of meaningful government-to-government free prior informed consent consultation and the absence of responsible efforts to manage lands important to indigenous populations, not to mention the public at large. At that time, we will be happy to discuss in detail these impacts and the ways in which they may or may not be mitigated. We would like to work with our local, state, federal, and international governments in identifying long-term responsible economic development strategies for all of us that are consistent with both traditional Apache values and scientifically informed environmentally sustainable practices. Thank you for your attention to our projects occurring on our traditional Apache lands, ancestral lands, to the many indigenous populations and the many diverse publics who use and care for the Oak Flat Apache Leap areas. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Michael Paul Hill, who is from the Lipan Apache Band of Texas. Thank you very much. I'd like now to move on to Lori Johnston of the Yamasee people. You have the floor, madam.
I actually spoke earlier on item 8, but if we had time, could we go back to the second decade?
No, we are dealing with item 8 now. Okay. So we will look at the issues later on. So it's Abdul Nasir from the Rural Community Development Program, Chitral. Is Abdul Nasir in the room? No? Javier Barrios from Mesa de Organizaciones de Comunidades de Pueblos Originarios Almirante Brown. Javier Barrios, you have the floor, sir.
Gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. I'm going to be speaking on behalf of communities in Argentina. And on behalf of the Topanamkum province community, and on behalf of CAPI in Paraguay, and on behalf of another Paraguayan association. So this is a joint statement. With proposals for inclusion on the agenda of the next session. Madam Chairperson, distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, distinguished indigenous representatives and representatives of governments. Much has been said about the impact of climate change throughout the world. With sorrow and despair, there have been descriptions of the impact of substantial change in biodiversity, which jeopardizes the very foundation of the life of indigenous peoples throughout the world. The pollution, the devastation, the irreversible damage done to ecosystems, land, territory of indigenous peoples prompt us to say that use of vital elements such as air, earth, the flora, the fauna, water, will increasingly be scarce resources available only to the powerful. And as you know, they are already colonizing our territories and they will find new ways of doing so. These same powerful parties, governments and extractive company industries, used to exploit ruthlessly the natural and human resources, and they are making life on Earth ever more difficult. We have to take a stand against them. And so, Madam Chairperson, we think it very important that the agenda for the 9th session include, as was said by Peru earlier, the matter of water. Water is a vital resource. It sustains life for everybody and specifically for indigenous persons. So it is very important to us, Madam Chairperson, that the Permanent Forum and the United Nations agencies recommend very special and sensitive treatment of water, of the water issue, so as to conserve it and sustain it in the water basins, particularly in South American areas. The second item we would like to propose for inclusion on the agenda is on indigenous justice. In other words, customary justice of the indigenous peoples. We say justice, customary law of indigenous peoples. These are tools to implement the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We want to ensure that future generations will still have their own identity, their cultures, their traditions, their social organization, their policies, and their age-old ways. The principle of self-determination for indigenous peoples is also a principle that must be maintained. It would be a purely illusory if the Western world, the other, that is, were not to recognize the validity of our customary laws and our system of administering justice. And so we'd like to propose customary law and the administration of justice of indigenous peoples as an item on the agenda for the next session, so that it can be recognized and respected by governments and individuals. And lastly, Madam Chairperson, we propose for inclusion on the agenda of the next session of the Permanent Forum the related issues of the extractive industries and preservation of the environment and natural resources. And we'd like to propose that special attention be given to the item protected areas in order to ensure compliance with international norms. For in various parts of South America, these protected areas are constantly constantly under attack. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, members of the Permanent Forum. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Javier Barrios, from Mesa de Organizaciones de Comunidades de Pueblos Originarios Almirante Brown. I'd like now to call on Justa Cabrera, from the Confederación de Mujeres in Bolivia. No? No more. Okay. I'd like to call on Mr. Igberto Tabo from COICA. You have the floor, Igberto.
Gracias, señora.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wish to say hello to each and every one of you and also those that are among the experts group. For COICA, as an indigenous organization and allied organization, we have been working together toward better manners of participating in different fora. Here in the forum, it is very important for us to be present. We also want to hear the reports from the states regarding the rights of indigenous peoples. We wish to contribute to the reports. I think that in this way we can improve the essence and meaning of the permanent forum. Along these lines, I have a number of very specific recommendations as regards the matters that we deem most important in the rights of our peoples. We demand that the experts look at matters that affect indigenous people, such as the work in the commission that looked at the case of the Guarani. We also see that there are peoples not contacted in the Amazon basin. We think that a commission could be put together to look into the existence of these peoples that have not been contacted, the idea being to give a special treatment to these situations, the idea being to include into the forum and the agenda these matters. There's another matter that I wish to address. It has to do with participation. As indigenous peoples, we see the scant participation of women, Amazonian women specifically. And there is the UN Declaration, which recognizes different forms of recognition and leadership and governance within the United Nations or in the Permanent Forum. We are not contributing to the implementation of the Declaration. If we don't do that here, the governments certainly won't do so. we wish to put priority to this topic on the agenda, participation. Now, there is also the issue of the Amazon basin and the Latin American countries, in which countries have established the IRSA program. This has to do with regional integration. And Madam Chairperson, we see with great concern that these decisions are not being borne in mind in the forum. We would like for this to be addressed in the next permanent forum as a matter of transcendental importance, because our rights as indigenous people are being undermined. The matter of mining, petroleum, hydroelectric dams, monocrops, all of these are affronts on the rights of the indigenous peoples, and not just those in the Amazon region, but in general, more broadly. Madam Chair, I would like for the next forum to invite the IDB, the World Bank, and all of those bodies that are financing the work of the state. It's important to hear their positions, and it's also important for them to hear our concerns. We are demanding that the banks, the IDB, the World Bank, redirect their policies, because we cannot continue to be upset about things that have happened. We need to look forward. These are our concerns, Madam Chairperson, and we wish that the participation of these other entities be borne in mind. We also here are present to contribute. The operations of the permanent forum should and could begin to be restructured in order to ensure that many of those that are affected by these problems be included. We don't want those who are affected to not be included here. We wish to say this with great respect. We want to strengthen the forum. That's all I have right now, and I thank all of the participants.
Thank you very much, Egberto Tablo from COICA. Well, I'd just like to respond to some of the points you raised. Regarding the participation of Amazon indigenous women, I think you have to know that the possibilities for them, for women in general to participate, is really dependent on the funds that are made available for them. And you should know that there is this voluntary fund for indigenous populations, which is not managed by the permanent forum, but by the Office of the Human Rights Commission, no, or the Office of the High Commissioner on Human Rights. So please make sure that you inform all the various Amazon indigenous women's organizations about this existing fund so that they can actively and they can participate in greater numbers. The point you raised about the World Bank, IADB, and ADB, I'd like to tell you that you have the World Bank people have been here since day one, and they are there near you, as well as the IADB and the ADB people. So it's really an occasion for you to also have those meetings with them, but also I think they heard what you are saying in terms of the concerns that indigenous peoples have. But thank you very much for these suggestions, and we will take this into consideration. I'd like now to call on Kenneth Deer from the Eastern, I don't know your organization, I know you are from the Kanawagi community and the Eastern Door. So Kenneth Deer, you have the floor. Kenneth Deer, by the way, is another member also of the UN Voluntary Fund on Indigenous Population.
Which agenda item am I speaking under?
You said you want to speak under the agenda item 8, which is the proposed agenda for next year.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse my confusion. I thought we were talking about human rights, listening to all the interventions that were around me. I just like to... First of all, I want to compliment the Permanent Forum for all its work this week, and also the Secretariat for servicing the indigenous peoples under the tough conditions that they have to work under, and also want to congratulate DOSIP for its work. I would just like to comment on the schedule of the for next year. For the last 2 years, the Permanent Forum has only been working with 9 working days. There's been holidays and during the working group, and we hope that when the working group is scheduled for next year, that we have full full 10 days of work, and to make sure that we can fill in all that way every indigenous people have more speaking time with that day that we are entitled to have. Okay, thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much, Kenneth. Well, actually, for next year, if the dates that are given to us, which is April 19 to 29, will happen, there will be no holiday in those 2 weeks, so it can be 10 working days. I'd like now to call on Charmaine Whiteface, who is speaking on behalf of Titoan Oyate, the Titon Sioux Nation, Titon Sioux Nation Treaty Council, Otsapawase Nation, Aboriginal Commission on Human Rights Canada, Indigenous Women's Network, and the Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nations. You have the floor, Charmaine Whiteface.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, for this opportunity to speak on this serious issue on behalf of all these nations. This is a joint statement from a number of North American Indigenous peoples and nations. The results of uranium exploration, extraction, and development, and the processing and use of nuclear energy and nuclear weapons manufacturing have grave consequences not only on human beings, but on the entire environment for thousands of years in the future. We cannot leave this legacy to future generations. Thus, we make the following recommendations. The forum appoint a member of the forum to conduct a study without financial implications on the impacts on Indigenous peoples caused by all aspects of the nuclear industry, including uranium exploration and mining, nuclear development, processing and testing, nuclear power plants, the transportation of nuclear materials, nuclear waste, implications of Indigenous peoples' permanent sovereignty over natural resources, free, prior, and informed consent, treaty obligations, and impacts to health. The results of such a study should be presented at the next most immediate session of the Permanent Forum. Furthermore, the impacts on Indigenous peoples by the nuclear industry should be an agenda item at the ninth session. This would allow Indigenous peoples to present firsthand information on their dealings with the nuclear industry, especially those in consort with governments, an industry which greatly contributes to climate change and whose devastation is forever in terms of life as we know it. Thank you very much for considering our recommendations.
Thank you very much, Charmaine Whiteface from the Titoan Oyate. I would like to now give the floor to the last speaker in this list, Queen Mother, she spoke already. Okay, I would like now to give the, I'll give you the floor very briefly and then we'll move to the other list, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to speak in the record. I am Queen Mother Dr. Deloise Blakely, and I'm the Community Mayor of Harlem, but also I'm the Ambassador of Goodwill to many African nations. I'm also Greasewood Woman, Little John from Hopi Land, Navajo, named me, doing a repertoire that we had at their nation from Geneva, that we had our intervention on the mountain 7,000 feet above sea level in Arizona. The provision agenda for the ninth session of the Permanent Forum included on the agenda, Madam Chairperson, the Permanent Forum to hold a dialogue with a special rapporteur on human rights of the 55 million displaced African descendants on the Middle Passage of the Atlantic slave trade, to set up a commission to address these issues, which has never been addressed before in this institution of the United Nations. 3, partnership with the United Nations agencies, UNICEF, UNDP, WHO, Habitat, UNESCO, set up on Gori Island, Senegal, West Africa, the historical site acclaimed by the United Nations UNESCO as the most widely visited slave house in the world. 4. Set up also a place for the hip-hop generation that has been cut off from their people, many generation, and suffers in the streets of New York where this institution is held, with gun war, which is a war that rages the street every day because they do not know who they are based on cycle neurosis. We call on this body for them, the hip-hop generation, return to their homeland, to Africa, with the view to facilitate compassion, education, cultural understanding, and the cleansing, healing, and spiritual awakening or spiritual renewal for the displaced African descendants. Madam Chairperson, I call on the permanent members of the Indigenous Peoples, member state of the United Nations, I, Queen Mother Dr. Deloise Blakely, the community mayor of Harlem, representing 55 million displaced African descendants in the North Americas and in the diaspora. I am also the Queen Mother of the Middle Passage of the transatlantic ocean of the slave trade for an unbroken period of 500 years where we were sold as commodities. This is the greatest crime ever committed against humanity. We African displaced descendants call on the permanent forum to support us in our struggle to become a part of the human race, making us whole again. We urge the permanent forum to call upon the ECOSOC and Economics and Social Council, which is ECOSOC, present to the United Nations General Assembly our plight and abuse of human rights as we continue to lobby member states. We urge the permanent forum to call upon the United Nations General Assembly to declare this a crime against humanity, not only build a monument in memorializing our ancestors, which the United Nations is doing in respect to the Secretary General of the United States and the member nations, and the United Nations and its member states. In the spirit of Queen Mother Audley Moore, who lived almost 100 years, who lobbied in this institution during the time of Dawg Hammarskjöld, and with me the last 40 years of my lobbying here in this institution and making it possible for many of the indigenous to be here to participate in this forum that we fought for, and my ancestors in the slave trade, we call for reparation. And we thank you for allowing us, the displaced Africans, to speak at this institution.
Thank you very much. Well, I just would like to clarify that the indigenous peoples themselves have been the ones really fighting for the space that they had established here in the permanent forum. If you remember, we had the granddaughter of Descahe who has been here, and they were the ones who have really pushed for these spaces that we are now occupying. Thank you very much. I'd like now to go back to the list of under agenda item 4. This is the human rights agenda. We will not take everybody, but I would like to open up the list for those who have not had the opportunity to speak, and then we will have to adjourn early because the members of the forum have to come together and deal with all the additional recommendations that have been put before us. So I'd like to first call on Eleanor Diktaan from the Asian Indigenous Women's Network. After her, Margarita Gutierrez Romero, if she's around. Eleanor Diktaan, you have the floor.
The losses reported and the frequency of these extreme weather events.
Chair. Sorry. I'll just take a few minutes to open the file. A few seconds, I mean.
Okay, while you're opening your file, maybe I can call on Margarita Gutierrez. Is Margarita in the room? No? Saturnino Junicio from Movimiento de Acción Resistencia Indígena. No? Bijaya Suba from the National Foundation for the Development of Indigenous Nationalities. Is Bijaya in the room? Bijaya is not here. Okay, so let's go back to you, Eleanor, if you are ready now. Okay, after Eleanor, it will be Mina Susana Setra if she's in the room. But sure. Eleanor, you have the floor now.
Okay.
A seventh point is that progress towards reducing disaster risk is still very mixed.
Okay.
Generally, that many countries are making progress in strengthening their capacities.
A few seconds, Madam Chair.
Strengthening their legislation to address deficiencies in disaster preparedness and response, and there's also decent progress.
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and members of the Permanent Forum. In Asia, most of us are referred to with different names, except as indigenous peoples. Our governments continue to ignore their obligations to international human rights laws reiterated in the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Economic development comes in the forms of mines, dams, monocrop, biofuel, and oil palm plantations, economic land concessions, industrial zones, forests, and land reservation laws, including protected areas and ecotourism that displaces us from our lands and territories, thereby disenfranchising us of our roles and contributions to sustainable development, traditional spaces and livelihoods, and in the long run denies us our right to life with dignity. Our engagements with the civil society discussions on the proposed human rights body and the Commission on Women and Children under the Association of Southeast Asian Nations has been a venue for promoting the declaration and advocacy for its implementation. Southeast Asia being one of the sub-regions where a big population of indigenous peoples are found, we call on member states of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations to support the promotion, integration, and implementation of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples by institutionalized adoption as a standard within the proposed regional human rights body and the similarly proposed Commission on Women and Children. We particularly call on the ASEAN member states and the financial institutions to ensure, through a mechanism, indigenous women's and people's participation not only in the establishment of the regional human rights body and the Women's and Children's Commission, but also in the processes and discussions on the ASEAN community councils. These are the political security, economic, and socioeconomic pillars being discussed. Moreover, we recommend that indigenous women and peoples be officially represented in the different ASEAN processes and structures to ensure that the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and indigenous perspectives are taken into account. We would also like to express our gratitude given by the UNIFEM-CEDAW Southeast Asian Program for enabling indigenous women in the sub-region, Southeast Asian region, to participate in the several discussions on these regional human rights bodies. And we look forward to UNIFEM's continuing support as we do develop and expand our linkages in the promotion of indigenous peoples and women's rights in the region. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Eleanor Dictaan, on behalf of the Asian Indigenous Women's Network. I now call on Mina Susana Setra from Aliansi Masyarakat Adat Nusantara Aman. Are you in the room? Yes, please. You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, we would like to thank the Special Rapporteur for his visit to Indonesia on March this year and for his commitment to continue dialogue with Indigenous Peoples organizations and the Indonesian government on the situation of Indigenous Peoples and the recognition of their rights in Indonesia. We urge the Indonesian government to formally invite the special rapporteur to visit to Indonesia to continue this important dialogue. Madam Chair, we also would like to use this opportunity to draw attention on indigenous people's situation related to the development of extractive industries, such as mineral oil and gas extractions, which disproportionately impact indigenous people's rights and livelihood. Many corporations involved in extractive industries often involve in abuses of the rights of indigenous peoples to their land, territories, and resources, their civil and political rights, and the rights to determine development. Some even occur in intimidation to indigenous communities, kidnapping, killing, and torture. It is obvious that extractive industries have big power and many times prove as untouchable by the law in Indonesia. The Indonesian government even provide policies which are in favor to the development of extractive industries and protecting their interests, like Law No. 4, 2009, on coal and mineral mining, and the Government Regulation No. 2, 2008, on non-tax state revenues originating from utilization of forest areas for non-forestry activities, or well known as mining in protected forests. This regulation allowed issuance of license to 14 mining companies to open protected areas, protected forests, and production forests for mining activities and construction of infrastructure and toll roads. This is unacceptable. Madam Chair, while we talk about extractive industry, we recall our intervention on sixth session of UN Permanent Forum on the oil palm expansion. We have requested consideration to the Committee on Elimination of Racial Discrimination, or CERT, on its 71st session 2007 on the urgent action and early warning procedure concerning the situation and submitted follow-up report on February 2009. The CERT has recommended Indonesian government to review its laws and policies which not recognize and undermine indigenous people's rights. It's CERT/C/IDN/CO/3, August 2007. However, there has been no implementation on the CERT recommendations by the government on this matter. Our recommendations is, first, we request the special rapporteur and expert mechanism on the rights of indigenous peoples to make studies on the impacts of extractive industries to indigenous peoples and request the finding to be reported at the ninth session of this forum. And second, the government of Indonesia to implement and incorporate the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and ILO Convention 169 into the national law and recognition of indigenous people rights in Indonesia. The third, the government of Indonesia should review the plantation law Number 18, 2004, as recommended by the Committee on Elimination of Racial Discriminations, as well as other laws threatening indigenous people's rights. Fourth, for the government of Indonesia to take urgent measures to resolve land conflict, human rights violations, and environmental damage, as well as the alternative economic resources for affected indigenous peoples related to existence of extractive industries in Indonesia. The process should fully involve indigenous peoples with the principle of prior informed consent. One, before I finish, there's a special request by a representative of indigenous peoples who come to this place, to this forum. We would like to request the government of Netherlands to return the fund concession contract 1894 and 1892 between the Netherlands government through the VOC with 67 villages of Rakyat Penunggu communities in North Sumatra during the colonialization on using their land for tobacco plantations. The Indonesian government has nationalized all business after its independence. The indigenous peoples in the areas have won the case on Supreme Court that the land had to be returned to indigenous community in the areas. But until now, there's no executions of the Supreme Court decisions. The fund concession contracts are important since it is an evidence containing the recognition of land ownership of the indigenous peoples within the area since the colonialization era, and it will support the process at the Supreme Court. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mina Susana Sitra from Aman.
I call now on Rafael Tangmahuya, who is with the Zoe Reunification Organization. He's not in the room. Tupac Enrique from Tunatierra. Oh, yes, there. You take a seat, Mr. Tangmahuya, and read your statement. If Tupac Enrique, you prepare for the next space. Yes, Mr. Tangmahuya.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, for giving me the floor. I, from the Zoe Reunification Organization, inhabiting the Indo-Burma-Bangladesh frontiers, we were divided during the British colonial period. So we are fighting for reunification of our people. The rights of our people had been deprived of due to tripartite division of the British colonial period. So, actually, the British themselves tried to put us together again in their historic Chinlisay Conference, 1892. But so far had been not completed. The task had been left, keep pending so far. That is why even the Government of Indian Act 1935, Section 311, Clause 1, mentioned that we were called the tribal area. The Zhou people were included among the tribal areas in which they defined them as. Tribal areas are the frontiers of India, but not belong to British India, nor of Burma, or of any Indian state, or of any foreign state. So that is being the case in the Second World War. We were also spread declaration to oppose a new invader against Allied forces. But though we are in the front line, we fought the battle of the Second World War, but the Allied forces are winning. But our task has been done with a heroic death, and the people are also left homeless. But the task of the Allied forces had not been completed so far, and we are still divided during this period. So we are fighting for reunification of our people under single administrative unit, so that the rights of the Zhou people that had been deprived thereof during colonial periods should be restored by way of reunification, and thereafter to avail our fundamental freedom towards a peaceful process of self-determination. And in the meantime, our present need is, because we are spread for 100 years by the British colonialism, even our culture had been absorbed and marginalized by a majority to whom we were acceded to. So the cultural unity and integrity and solidarity in this period had been not in a position to be able to complete those things according to the UN declaration on this Article 36. So, Madam Chair, I would like to mention that though the declaration had been made there, our cultural unity, solidarity, and integrity cannot be performed because of the tripartite division that has been done to us. So we request now that this August Forum should make to all these country state concerns to adopt the declaration on the rights of indigenous people in their respective parliaments, so that the indigenous people in the world may also have such type of restoration of their fundamental right, so that they may avail their fundamental freedom. So in the meantime, the world, as we know, even this climatic change also, I would like to mention that.
Please conclude your statement now.
Yes, thank you, madam. So, because we are in the tribal region of Northeast India and Burma and Bangladesh area, our country has been in a forest. But when the government concerned with the main grid, they try to develop our areas by mentioning plantation of the mono-commercial trees, something like teak and eucalyptus. So our climate has been changed so much now, it is now difficult for the people to live on. So we request that all these climatic change to fight for the whole world as a carbon colonialism, that natural visitations of all the people's concerned area in the indigenous people areas should be restored towards the natural vegetation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'd like now to call on Tupac Enrique from Tunatierra. Yes, you have the floor. I'd like to tell you that you also have time limits. You only can speak up to 3 minutes, okay?
Señora Presidenta, muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. This is a message from Tupac Enrique. I have been asked to convey this message to you. Our brother Tupac Enrique is from Phoenix in the border area between Mexico and the United States. He has worked very hard with those who cross the border daily for work, and he asked me to say to you that most of the migrants in the south on that side of the river are indigenous persons. They are from Mexico, Guatemala, and all of South America. And to get to the border, they face many difficulties and dangers. And then once they are here in the United States, they are not regarded as indigenous persons or Native Americans. But they are not physically tied to their countries of origin, and so they are peoples left in limbo. But they are indigenous peoples, and they have asked me to ask the forum if they can be included here as migrants. The Office of the High Commissioner in Geneva has a committee on migrant workers. And in the United Nations, there's a convention on migrant workers, but that's within the Human Rights Council. However, the permanent foro falls under ECOSOC, the Economic and Social Council. The fact is that these indigenous brothers and sisters are regarded as human resources, and this is part of economic and social development, but there's a committee that deals with migrant workers, but on neither side do these persons get any attention at all. And this is why I was asked to ask the Permanent Forum if they could please be included here, and at the next session you could have a half-day debate to shed light on the situation of these indigenous brothers and sisters who deserve protection, because right now they do not get any protection and they are clamoring for attention. And so, Madam Chairperson, I wished to convey to you this request from my brother Tupac Enrique, and I trust that this request will be favorably received here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Tomas Alarcon, who spoke in favor of Tupac Enrique. I would like now to call on Kenneth Deere, who will speak in the place of Ashley Eiserhoff. You have the floor, Kenneth Deere.
Mr. Chairman, I'm speaking on behalf of the Mohawk Nation at Ganawage and other peoples in the Haudenosaunee who are gravely concerned about the current situation in the Mohawk community of Agwisasne, which straddles the border between Canada and the United States. Agwisasne is has a international border that goes right through its community. It's part in the United States, part in Canada, part in New York State, part in Ontario, and part in Quebec. It's a very unusual place. It has unusual problems. The concern that we have right now, though, is that the government of Canada, who operates the border, a border point inside the community of Agwizashne, has decided to arm its border guards. And the Mohawks of Agwizashne are against the arming of these guards as a public safety issue. These border guards have been there for decades and have never been armed, have not been armed in the past. And the border guards are protected by the Agwizashne Mohawk police, who are armed and who accompany the border guards and give the border guards security. However, now that the border guards themselves will be armed, the Mohawks of Agwizashne are concerned that this could lead to an escalation or an unintended incident of accidental firing of arms. And there are many Mohawk homes and businesses in the direct vicinity of the border point, and are concerned that border guards who have not been trained or have very little training in arms could accidentally injure Mohawks in the area, or even kill Mohawks in the area. 70% of the traffic that goes through that border point are Mohawk people. And so the chances of something happening or accident happening involving Mohawks is higher than with anybody else. This weekend, there will be peaceful demonstrations at the border point where Mohawks from different political stripes will be there to protest this arming of border guards. It has to be understandable that the Mohawks of Agwizashne are very much against the arming of these guards. They feel this is a peace and security issue, and that the Mohawks want all to start the process. What the Mohawks would like is to have a dialogue with the Canadian governments and the American governments to deal with this issue. Nobody wants to see this situation escalate into more than just a peaceful demonstration. This dialogue is to emphasize that we have a human right to peace and security, and that we are capable, in our right to self-determination, to maintain our own peace and our own security. We feel it's unnecessary for these guards to be armed. And I'm requesting that the permanent forum pay close attention to the situation. It's only a few hours from here. The Agwizashne would be about a six-hour drive from downtown New York. There are some Agwizashne people present in this meeting today, and we would like to respectfully request the permanent forum to keep a close watch on this issue. There is a representative on the permanent forum from North America. We would ask her to monitor this situation closely, perhaps even visit the site. If the permanent forum can raise this issue with the states concerned, it would be appreciated. And any other UN agency, including the Security Council if necessary, to make sure that this issue does not escalate into something more that could be settled by dialogue and respect for the rights of the Mohawk people. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much, Kenneth Deere. At this point, I would like to call on my colleagues who wish to take the floor, and I call on Tanya Gunella Frischner, member of the Permanent Forum. You have the floor, Tanya.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for recognizing me. I would like to respond to my colleague and brother, Kenneth Deere, for his statement. And my grave concern about listening very closely to what he had to say as to what was happening in his country in Mohawk territory. My concern is that the 70% of the traffic that does go through that border that he described has to do with Mohawk citizens who are going to school, going to work, food shopping, and doing their everyday domestic duties. And pretty much that is what they're doing on a daily basis when they cross that border. So when armed guards are put in the way of those processes, we're talking about security issues that could escalate into something none of us want. So, yes, I will be looking at this closely, and I am very concerned. And dialogue is always the best way to move in these situations, and hopefully all parties will stay calm and stay very calm and will keep it at a dialogue level. Madam Chair, when we're talking about border crossing issues, we're talking about what our brother Tupac Enrique sent as a message to us in terms of the Mexico-U.S. border. Our colleague Willie Littlechild and I both visited that Phoenix, Arizona area together by invitation. And we saw for ourselves the sort of, if you'll pardon the expression, Wild West mentality, where the local sheriff was deputizing people to arrest the local so-called migrants who were just standing on the corner waiting to be picked up for jobs, which is something they had been doing for years. And what we saw was an interference with a people's right to work. This was so controversial in terms of a local sheriff deputizing regular citizens that it made the front page of the local New York Times and eventually stopped. So this is the kind of thing that is going on in the Southwest, and it's something to be very concerned about because these migrant workers are indeed indigenous peoples. And the border crossing issues to the north of us here in the United States are about the Haudenosaunee crossing borders that are going to get even more difficult for us starting June 1st, and is something that we would like, hopefully, to be able to continue to do that we have been doing for a very long time because of treaties that we have with the United States that allow us to cross back and forth that we would like to continue to do. And I just wanted to bring this to your attention, Madam Chair, that you are very familiar with, and thank you for listening. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Tonya Gunella Frischner. Indeed, this issue in terms of borders and, of course, transboundary issues that are really very much relevant to indigenous peoples is a matter of concern for the Permanent Forum. And we've seen, in fact, I was quite impressed when I saw how the Haudenosaunee, the Mohawks, they have their own passports, and they can even travel with these passports to go to other countries. And I thought that was such a good practice, and it should really be something that should be emulated by other states, because the reality for many indigenous peoples, especially those caught in landlocked areas, is that they are caught across many indigenous people are found across several countries. And we have seen this with the Samis, who are in Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Russia. And that's the reason why they are wanting to develop something like the Nordic Convention, Sami Convention, no? And, of course, you also have your treaty agreements that are addressing the different nations in which you find yourselves in. The same case is in Asia. You know, we have heard Zorro, the brother from the Zoo, reunification society says that they are one people, but they are found in India and in Myanmar and in, I don't know, in Bangladesh, no? So you see that is a common picture amongst indigenous peoples all over the world, and that's precisely why we put a provision in the declaration, UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, that the rights of peoples to move you know, freely within in these kinds of borders should be respected, because that's one of the distinct particularities of indigenous peoples in many parts of the world. No, so I think bringing that to our attention is something that we should discuss more extensively, and I am sure next year that can be really an area where there can be more sharing in terms of the good practices that are happening, like, for instance, those passports of yours, you know, the kinds of situations where you are, your mobility between countries is allowed, but of course to also address these constraints. And I'm sure that has been a big issue here in the United States because of that big wall built in between Arizona and Mexico. No, and I think we need to go more deeply into this issue and come up with some clearer recommendations on how to deal with the issue. Thank you very much, Tonya, and thank you, Kenneth, for this contribution. Now I would like to ask any of my colleagues if they would like to take the floor, because we have decided, the members of the forum have decided that we still have a few hours left, but we would like to end the sessions now, because when the ELP papers came out, there are a lot of recommendations that came into the attention that were brought to the members of the forum. And we have to discuss this amongst ourselves. As you know, we can only adopt a recommendation if all of us agree. If there is one person, just one person who cannot agree, there's no way that we can adopt a recommendation. So it will take a lot of time for us to discuss this. And having the last name in the agenda item 8 and accommodating a few from the remaining list of the human rights agenda item, we would like to request you that we will be given this remaining time for us to talk about this further recommendation, so that tomorrow when we go into agenda item 9, which is the adoption of the report, we will be able to agree on what other recommendations we can integrate into the L papers that you already have with you now. There are some suggestions for revisions, etc., and we have to agree on all of these. So with your, I would like to beg your indulgence that we can cut back this session, but the members of the forum will still stay in the room because they will have to discuss amongst themselves with the interpreters. But before I do that, I would like to ask the government of Indonesia, who asked to have a right of reply. Please, you have the floor, madam.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity given to my delegation. I will be brief in presenting our view as follows. First, we take note on the statement delivered by our esteemed colleague from Aliansi Masyarakat Adat Nusantara. I hope she is in here in this room now. Second, we would like to reiterate our statement yesterday on our firm commitment in promoting the welfare and protection of human rights of all of our citizens. Thirdly, if our esteemed colleague from Aman has a real concern on such issue, her organization can channel its view and concern through the appropriate and democratic institution, such as the parliament, media, and related executive branch. Through this channel, I'm sure that her concern and her organization concern will be truly taken care of. As stated in our previous statement, partnership is the key in addressing those concerns. I thank you, Madam Chair.
I thank the representative of the observer state of Indonesia, and also for your offer to the representatives of Aman to go and speak with your with the various authorities, and that you are going to listen to their concern. I hope when you go out of this room, you can talk with the other representatives who are here, so that you can have that kind of discussion and make arrangements in terms of how they will raise these concerns with you. So let me now adjourn this meeting and have an
an extra time for you to go and look at the city, and we will meet amongst ourselves. The members of the forum have to stay in this room because we want to use the full interpretation for our sessions. So this meeting is adjourned. We meet here tomorrow at 10 o'clock. This meeting is adjourned. We'll just have a few minutes, the members of the forum, and then we'll come back in 10.
Translate that into resources both at national level and at international level to help countries to do the things that we know they need to do. I don't think there's any magic answer to this. There isn't a single trick. But that's why it's very important that reports like this exist, that we get these messages across very seriously. And that's why, in a sense, climate change is an opportunity as well as a huge risk. Because the risks are clearer to everybody from these kind of disasters. It is increasing the sense of urgency, and therefore, hopefully, the messages which people like ISDR have been hammering away at for some time will become clearer, more accepted, and actually more acted upon. That's the key point, acted upon, not just accepted in theory. I don't know whether anybody else wants to comment or
I just wanted to add that I think one of the ways, as useful as these reports are to keep attention, build the awareness, the other area I think that's quite important is increasing the abilities of experience in countries. And it struck me what the ambassador of Ecuador said, of the in-country experience needs to be shared much more widely. We know countries in Asia often affected by these natural disasters. Some countries have a unique systems of early warning and active and greater prevention capacity. So certainly within UNDP, we want to find ways of encouraging, whether it's south-south or north-to-south or south-to-north, but the sharing of experience, mm-hmm. and in a sense, to have the best examples be set as the minimum bar so that there's challenge in a sense to the entire world to do a better job. So we in UNDP actively look forward to collaboration with member states in sharing of examples, having the capacity to plan better and be prepared better, shared, and especially with countries that do not have a tradition of that. Having just come from Liberia, I know it was very difficult in a country coming out of crisis to get the attention to the effects that happened from floods, but they were helped by being able to hear from other countries about how to do a better job of that. So it was, I think, one area where there can be a considerable global solidarity in moving mm-hmm. forward on this agenda.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Ambassador, would you like to comment?
Yes, also very briefly, I think that the question addressed by our colleague of Norway is a key one in terms of the political will. And I think that countries like Ecuador, I mean, we have made an enormous effort to develop our national platform. And it is because we have done the maths. I mean, we have assessed, for example, the decrease in our GDP because of floods or because of earthquakes or because of volcano eruption. And we know that it is indeed an investment. And that's why we have taken the political decision of not only creating a national platform, but to establish very regulations and guidelines for public investment, for example. Public investment that is sensitive to the issue of risk management. And I think that above all, I mean, we don't have a choice.
choice at this point in time because of the adverse impacts of climate change. All of our countries are facing the same situation. So I don't think that at this point in time we have a choice. And what we have done also is that we have included in a cross-cutting way the issue of risk management in our national development plan. Because we live, that's a daily life issue for us, you know, volcanoes and floodings and earthquakes. And Ecuador is not alone. I mean, there are so many other countries that have to face the same issues. And for that, I think also that this could be one of the issues on which we can strengthen South-South cooperation, for example. And also, as I mentioned, look at the review process of the NDGs under the lenses of risk management and risk reduction. I think that because it's not there. And we have here a lot of, you know, great indicators and information that would help us do that. So I think it's a matter of political will and a matter of simple numbers. I'm very happy to know this report that is coming out from the World Bank on the macroeconomics of hazards and risk. I don't know exactly what it is, but to help countries, you know, to see this as an investment and as a very important investment to ensure secure and sustainable livelihoods for our people. I mean, that's as simple as that.
Thank you, Ambassador. I would like now to turn to Mr. Holmes and give him the floor to make final concluding remarks.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. I mean, I'll be very brief. I think a lot of it's all been said one way or another, I think, by my fellow panelists and the few comments that have been made. I mean, just to illustrate some of the points, I think it's worth drawing attention to some of the conclusions of the report again, or some of the data in the report. Just to illustrate the point that the Ambassador of Ecuador was just making, there's a very good graph on page 9 of the summary of the report, which shows the relative impact on GDP of disasters, on economic losses, in St. Lucia, Samoa, Madagascar, and then compared to richer economies, which are more able to absorb these events, which just shows the unevenness of the spread of these things. Secondly, I was struck by the figure in the report somewhere that taking similar risks in different countries. In Japan, for example, it says that 22.5 million people are exposed to tropical cyclones, the risk of tropical cyclones every year, and 16 million people have an equivalent exposure in the Philippines. But the death toll in the Philippines is 17 times higher than that in Japan. And of course, you get the same sort of effect on the damages side. And looking at the effect of floods and making a comparison between OECD countries and South Asia, although in absolute terms, the economic losses of OECD countries are probably greater than they are in South Asia, as a proportion of GDP, the losses in South Asia are 15 times as great. So this is the illustration of the unevenness of these effects and the unevenness of the spread and the unevenness of the impact of disasters. And I think they just illustrate the points that we're making. The main point that we're making that if we do incorporate disaster risk reduction properly in development plans and policies, that not only reduces risks of disasters, it also helps reduce poverty, safeguard development achievements, and help adaptation to climate change. And that's the kind of triple game which the Ambassador was talking about and which we just have to be conscious of when we're talking about achieving the MDGs. And it's also the reason that, for example, two of the campaigns that the ISDR system, and it's not just a secretariat, it's of course a system across the UN and more widely than that, two of the campaigns we've run are about safer schools and safer hospitals. We're still running the Safer Hospitals campaign because relatively small investments in safeguarding those essential public institutions, no more than 4% extra on the cost of building them to make them actually properly resilient to disasters, can have a huge effect when the disaster actually strikes, because these are absolutely essential to the ability to cope with the disasters and the ability to recover from them. Just a final point. This, as I said when I in my introduction, this report was prepared as one of the contributions for the forthcoming global platform on disaster risk reduction, which will take place in 3 weeks' time in Geneva. And I should say that the whole report, I think, is already available in the six official languages of the UN. The global platform looks like being a very lively and dynamic event, as indeed it was 2 years ago in Geneva. We've already got more than 1,400 participants registered from member states, the UN, civil society, and many people around the world. And this global platform will not only be looking at this report and using this report as a basis for its work, but also will be initiating discussions on the midterm review of the Hyogo framework. This was agreed in 2005. It's a 10-year program. 2010 is not very long away. So we'll be starting the midterm review of the Hyogo framework and looking at progress, which, as I've said, is good in some ways, but certainly not satisfactory given the overall situation. But there'll also be a particular focus on five major issues. First of all is progress we've made in financing disaster risk reduction, as in that covers both national and international levels, reducing disaster risk in a changing climate, enabling community-led resilience through preventative action, fourthly, safer schools and hospitals, and then building back better disaster risk reduction and recovery. So those will be some of the major themes of the global platform, which I hope all member states will be taking part in one way or another. I might also mention that in the ECOSOC humanitarian segment in Geneva this year, in the middle of July, I think it's on the 17th of July, we'll also have a briefing about the results of the global platform, and we'll also try to organize briefings in New York as well, as required after the global platform is over. So that's what I really wanted to say by way of conclusion. Thank you very much again to you, Ambassador, and to my fellow panelists for their contributions. I think this is a hugely important subject, but what we need really is not even more reports and more meetings, good though they are, but actually some action.
Thank you. At the end of this meeting, let me say that disaster risk reduction needs to be integrated nationally and work towards set targets of development policies. Local authorities at the very grassroots level need to be empowered with adequate resources to adopt risk reduction measures. At the multilateral level, it is incumbent upon all countries to adopt a risk-sensitive approach. That should be a key message during the upcoming general debate of the 64th session of the General Assembly, in September, especially given that it feeds into the high-level summit on the climate change to be held on 22nd of September, as called by the Secretary General. And I would like to thank our panelists for the comprehensive presentation, and I would like to thank all of you for your attendance. The meeting is adjourned.